Johnson. You may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. When Richard and Rachel Gonzalez directed me to file suit on their behalf in the Superior Court here of the District of Columbia, I had a number of duties. The first duty, not necessarily in priority, was to protect the lien under FICA that the United States had against any recovery that a beneficiary received, in this case, Mrs. Gonzalez, that would have to be reimbursed to the government. The other duties, obviously, were to Richard and Rachel to maximize their claims. In the Superior Court, a very complicated case, we reached an obstacle in the decision of Judge Burgess, in which he essentially split the case. And while it's not in the record, there was an insurer for the first part of the case, an insurer for the second part of the case. And the Gonzalez's were confronted with how to deal with these three duties. In dealing with the three duties, I looked at the regulations which they had complied with throughout the case, notifying the Department of Labor of this case and keeping them advised of it, and saw the regulation, which is 10.712 in the Code of Federal Regulations.
And decided you'd try to find a way around it.
Sir?
And decided you'd try to find a way around it.
Your Honor, I think we complied explicitly with the instruction. And I think that Mr. Birch has admitted that. And this is kind of an interesting case for the court. It's like an ideal case for the court in that the court really doesn't have to decide any of the contested issues. If there was a joint settlement, then the government must respect it. If there was not a joint settlement, then there were no fees that they could exercise their lien on that went into the pocket of Mrs. Gonzalez. So the rules have been followed here. What Mr. Birch is saying is that the FICA manual, which revises Section 7112, has to be followed here. And, of course, the manual.
It would seem that he's correct, wouldn't it?
That the FICA manual should be.
Have you got the agreement in front of you, the settlement agreement?
I have the settlement agreement. I'm fully aware of it.
This confidential settlement and joint tortfeasor release and indemnity agreement is made by and between Richard F. Gonzalez and Rachel Gonzalez, plaintiffs. They're both parties to this settlement, right?
Yes, sir.
And the regulatory structure provides a method of determining distribution as between the consort and the principal.
The regulation does, yes, sir.
Yeah, but the part of it upon which you rely applies only in the event of judgment, doesn't it?
No, sir. That's what Mr. Birch
said.
What
does it say it applies to? Do you have that in front of you?
I do. 712A says that when a settlement is paid to or for more than one individual, for example, a joint payment to a husband and wife for personal injury and loss of consortium, the gross recovery is to be reported as the amount, quote, allocated to the injured employee. And the...
Keep reading.
Yes, sir. It goes on to say that if a judge or jury specifies the percentage of a contested verdict attributable to each of several plaintiffs, OWC or SOL will accept that division. That didn't occur here.
That's right, it didn't.
No, sir.
Therefore, what governs in this case?
The first sentence.
Is that all that governs?
Yes, sir. Because the section under which Mr. Birch is asserting that the OWCP can do what they wish is Section B, which
yes.
says in any other case.
In any other case?
Yes, sir.
So that would govern this case. This is another case, right?
No, sir. This
it's
is
not one decided by a judge or jury, right?
No, it's not. It's a
right.
settlement.
Right.
Under which
so
the
why
allocation.
Why doesn't B govern then?
A settlement must be respected in terms of its allocation.
And what's the provision of this settlement that governs it? Excuse me. Leave that statement off for the moment because that's you're begging the question when you say that. That's what this whole lawsuit's about, is whether you can use this settlement to govern the allocation. You're begging the question.
Not entirely, sir. I don't think I'm begging the question.
What is the provision of this settlement that you're relying upon?
I believe it's paragraph 13 that says there's an allocation.
And what 13 says is Read me the first sentence of 13, if you would, please. Even the first line will do.
Even the first two words.
Even the first two words, yeah.
Paragraph 13?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The defendants understand that plaintiffs, as between themselves and in consultation with their attorneys, have allocated the consideration. Yes, sir.
Yeah. You read that part about as between themselves.
Yes, sir.
This does not even purport to govern anybody else, does it?
It governs the Department of Labor.
This does not even purport to govern anybody else, does it?
I disagree. It governs.
Read me the part where it says anything about it governing anybody else.
It doesn't, sir.
Right.
But.
Bingo.
I don't understand the bingo, because I read this
because
sentence.
Because I asked you if it purports to govern anybody other than the plaintiffs. You said that it did, and I said, read me the part where it does, and you said it doesn't.
In the language, sir.
In the language. Is there some part of this paragraph that isn't written in language?
Sir, the...
Was it carved in stone or something?
No, sir. Elsewhere in the agreement, it makes clear that the defendants, that the Gonzaleses are taking the risk with respect to the Department of Labor, because the statute says that no one can pay money to a beneficiary as a result of a settlement without satisfying the government's lien. And as I read the second sentence of 712A, if a settlement is paid in a joint payment, the Department of Labor must respect the amount allocated to the employee. That's what the Department of Labor's own...
712A in your brief? Let's see.
It's contained in the beginning of the government's brief in this, where the regulations are set out.
You didn't put the governing regs and statutes in your brief?
We quoted them in the brief, Your Honor, at various places.
Okay.
It's easier for me to refer you to the government's brief where they're set out.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's why we request parties to set out in the brief the provisions upon which they're relying.
My apologies, Your Honor. Yeah.
In any other case where a judgment or settlement is paid to or on behalf of more than one individual, a WCP or SOL will determine the appropriate amount of the FICA beneficiary's gross recovery and advise the beneficiary of its determination.
Yes, sir.
How can you then say that they're bound by the terms of this settlement when B expressly says the WCP or SOL will determine the appropriate amount?
Sir, it's in any other case.
Mm-hmm. And this is another case, right?
Yes, sir.
It's one that isn't within the terms of Section A, right?
I don't agree, sir. It comes squarely within the terms of the second sentence. The Department of Labor says it's a joint settlement, but then they refuse to recognize the allocation. This is the problem when one is arguing the plain language of a statute or regulation. What does one say? If you take a look, Your Honor, at the FICA manual changes this regulation. The FICA manual, as we've said in our reply brief, does what you would like this to do and what the Department of Labor would like this to do. It says that
the agreement, by the terms you read to me, said as between the plaintiffs. That's how they're dividing it. There's nothing in that settlement that purports to govern anybody else as to that division. Is there, counsel?
Oh, yes, sir. It is.
I asked you to read me that part a while ago, and you said it wasn't in there. Are you now saying it is in there?
It doesn't say anything in that provision about the Department of Labor.
Does it say it somewhere else in that provision?
It does refer to the Department of Labor elsewhere.
It doesn't say anything about binding the parties to the agreement, even, as to that division. The defendants being released simply acknowledge that you're claiming that on behalf of the plaintiffs. That's
they don't
all
care.
It does, isn't it?
They don't care what the Gonzaleses do with the money. The only entity
they had
that
a
cares.
For sharing at the time.
The only entity that cares is the Department of Labor. And the Department of Labor was advised of this agreement. The Department of Labor was advised of my reading of the regulation. The Department of Labor simply said, we don't think you're right. The Department of Labor and Mr. Birch must rely on the FICA manual in order to achieve the result they wish to achieve in this case. Not the regulation, They must rely on the FECA manual, where they completely revise the language of this regulation to say that under a settlement as well as a judgment in a contested verdict, both must be approved either by a jury or a judge. And that's not what the regulation says.
But if your reading of subdivision A is correct, there's no point in the last sentence right. of that regulation. That becomes totally superfluous. Why is that there?
Your Honor, I did not draft the regulation. But
we
have there clearly
the regulation.
Yes, sir. But there clearly are two parts to this regulation, one having to do with the settlement and the other having to do with a contested verdict.
But the sentence that Judge Brown refers to, if a judge or jury specifies the percentage of a contested verdict attributable to each of several plaintiffs, OWCP or SOL will accept the division. Then the next sentence is the one that is designated B. In any other case where a judgment or settlement is paid. So I don't see how you can get around this being exactly what's contemplated by any other case.
Well, Your Honor, there are two kinds of, there are actually three kinds of cases that are described in A. One is a settlement with only one individual. That's paragraph, that's sentence one. The second is a settlement or judgment which is joint, and that's the way they've interpreted this, although I disagree with that. And then the third case is a contested case. So there are three different cases in A. When we have B, in any other case means any case other than those three. Now, Your Honor, if this is what FECA beneficiaries and their spouses are looking at when they're determining how to maximize their benefit, then they're entitled to read it as it is being read by us. And, Your Honor, I'm sure Mr. Birch is going to tell you that the only way for the Department of Labor to have its way is for the court to adopt the FECA manual language, which is quite different from this. The point is that when we looked at this and we brought this to the attention of the Department of Labor, we told them that if you think that this is a joint settlement, we are relying upon this statute. And in the correspondence that's exchanged among counsel, there's nothing that the Department of Labor says other than, well, we think it's a joint settlement. Well, fine. If they think it's a joint settlement, the allocation applies.
The allocation is not by a judge or jury. This is another case.
It's not by a judge or jury. Not
right,
at all.
This is another case, different from the one by a judge or jury.
It's different than paragraph three. Well, Your Honor, there's another interesting. Yes, ma'am.
In the first sentence, the first thing you said was the first case is where you only have one individual. That's not what the first sentence says. It says is paid to or for more than one individual or in more than one capacity. Is it your position that this is not a joint settlement, that it does not resolve both her claim and his claim?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. When I was referring to a one individual case, that's the first sentence. You're correct. The second sentence applies to this case. Now, my position is that the Department of Labor has said it's a joint settlement. If the Department of Labor says it's a joint settlement, they have to respect the allocation.
Right, but you're saying it's a joint settlement as well.
Now, Your Honor, my position also is that it is not a payment in settlement of a liability of Mrs. Gonzalez. It has to be a payment to or for her.
It says it is.
Releases all her claims.
She does. No, she doesn't release all her claims.
Except for the elevator.
That's important, Your Honor, because.
No, it's not.
Not as to these two.
No, it's not.
Whoever these other two elevator people were.
Yeah, Your Honor,
not even relevant. It's really not even relevant. She releases all claims as to the parties of the agreement. There could be 1,000 other parties out there against whom she might have claims. It's not only not important, it's not even relevant.
Well, Your Honor, there is an additional issue having to do with whether this regulation is permissible at all with respect to loss of consortium claims. Because
over time on your argument allocation, do my colleagues have further questions? Seeing none, your time is expired, and we'll hear from briefly from the appellee.
May it please the court, good morning. I'm joined at council table today by Craig Lawrence of our office and also Tom Giblin of the Department of Labor. If I could just briefly address the questions put to Mr. Hannon. Indeed, the regulation does speak for itself. The only way to make sense of it is to interpret the phrase in B in any other case to refer to the preceding sentence. And indeed, you get that by looking at the very next clause under B, which refers back to the subject matter of what was going on in the previous two sentences. It says, in any other case where a judgment or settlement is paid to or on behalf of more than one individual. That's clearly referring back to what was going on in the second half of A. So OWCP or SOL will determine the appropriate amount of any other allocation. Secondly, it is worth noting, if you get this far, that the allocation supposedly made in the joint agreement or the settlement agreement on page 148 of the appendix, paragraph 13 doesn't purport to actually allocate anything. It just says that the two plaintiffs, the two Gonzalez's, are going to do that themselves, and it doesn't say what the amount is. Finally, of course, the agency's interpretation is spelled out clearly in the manual that shows up at page 89, which explains exactly the same interpretation of the in any other case provision of the regulation, that applies when the Department of Labor will make the allocation if it hasn't been made already by a judge or jury.
Okay.
Can I ask you about how labor, looking at A, we don't have a judge or jury.
Right.
But what the person who has a joint settlement or judgment is to do is to report the gross recovery.
Right.
And so if the gross recovery of the injured employee is zero, I mean, how do you read that in this case? What was the point of their reporting to you zero?
They didn't report. They reported the full amount. The full amount of $625,000 was reported. That starts the process of DOL making the determination of how much needs to be refunded, if any.
All right. So if they reported the whole $600,000+,
right,
as the amount allocated to the injured employee.
They reported the whole amount.
They could be stopped, I suppose, from saying that wasn't allocated, from denying that it was allocated to the injured employee. But if they report 600 and some thousand, are you free to say, well, actually, that isn't what the injured employee received?
Right. That's the whole process, the whole point of the process. If you turn to page 278 of the joint appendix, you see the sort of the form of where they show their work about the numbers. And they start with the 625 just because that's the number of the settlement agreement. They don't purport to look at the any allocation that has been made by the parties.
Right.
And then they go through a process, and the primary guts of the process, I guess you could say, is they take the 25% that they use as a matter of policy, and they say, well, we will apply our the normal maximum amount and go from there. There are three stages to the administrative process. At any stage, the Gonzalez's were offered the opportunity to offer evidence to support a higher allocation. And the only evidence they proffered was this argument that it's not a joint settlement agreement.
Well, as I understand Mr. Hannon's argument, he's saying that when it falls into what he sees as this second category, i.e., it's a settlement for which there is no judicial allocation,
right,
they get to, the
right,
parties get to say how that's allocated. So if they had reported to you zero, what would have been the department's recourse?
The number they report is not so, I don't believe, is controlling on the process. What is controlling is that they have complied with the obligation to notify the department of the settlement and the terms of the settlement agreement, and then the department starts the process of calculating what the appropriate allocation would be. There's certainly no support for the notion that the parties get to determine what the allocation is. There's a case I didn't cite in my brief that actually touches on that, and that is The Ward case versus Department of Labor, 726 F. 2nd, 516 9th Circuit, 1984. And it has very clear language about what would happen if you would, if that were the case, if the parties were able to determine the allocation. It says, quote, the reasons propounded by parties for entering a third-party settlement should have no bearing on the government's right to reimbursement under Section 8132. Requiring inquiry into motives for settlement would provide too great an impetus for litigants to manipulate application of Section 8132 by self-serving characterizations of their reasons for settlement, end quote. That's the core of the government's argument, and that's reflected in the administrative record. If you look at page 298, 299, you'll see the same reasoning reflected at the agency level.
So you're reading this as a starting point, in other words, like an income tax return.
Essentially.
Here's what I owe the government.
And that's right.
That doesn't mean that's really what I owe the government, according to the IRS.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah.
The whole determination is to look through what the parties report or want it to be and to make their own determination. Is there any other questions about the...
Being none. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Unless you all wish to hear him again, the case will be submitted.